Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the defense against the Packers in this final preseason game. What defense? That is a good question. It wasn't a good defensive effort. Obviously, the Ravens got rolled pretty badly, particularly in the run game. Talked about that a lot in the first episode. They gave up 12 runs of 6-plus yards. Don't believe that bears a tremendous amount of portent for the negative portent anyway for the season. I think they'll have a number of players back who are among their better run defenders that should change those outcomes significantly. But it certainly was not pleasant to watch. And it wasn't pleasant very clearly in the eyes of John Harbaugh, who was a visage of disgust on the sideline in terms of his continual boiling up frustration with the way his team played against the Packers. Now, I'm sure he's able to move aside from it. He's also very concerned about the injuries in this game. And one thing about Harbaugh that is interesting, he is an extremely tough talker with regard to injuries. So it was mentioned in the broadcast, and it's a good point, that coaches do not appreciate self-pity on the football field. Well, I can tell you, John Harbaugh does not appreciate self-pity with regard to injuries. And that's why he always has to take the same line. He says, it's not going to be about injuries. It's going to be about how much we want it, kind of thing. He basically will repeat that mantra all through a single season. And he will only talk about it during the offseason. And after 2015, when the Ravens had just an injury-plagued year that destroyed any chances the team had. You know, Joe Flacco was eventually hurt, but Suggs was hurt in week one. And they lost a lot of other players that were important along the way. The season was just destroyed by injury like almost none has been, or certainly like none in Ravens history has been. And Harbaugh was willing to talk about it after the season. He wasn't willing to engage in something that would give his players an excuse during the regular season. But this was a frustrating day for injuries, and this has a frustrating impact on the Ravens, who now have some roster spots to fill, probably with players who are not currently with the organization by week one. It won't necessarily all be completed by Tuesday, but it will hopefully occur by week one. So the biggest spot that appears up for grabs is that third running back spot, where Owen Wright appeared to have it won. Rasheen Ali hasn't even been on the field for a while now, but he hasn't played well at any point during his tenure. He had a poor first game, and then he missed the second, the next two. And he hasn't honestly looked all that good in camp to my eye. I haven't, it is very difficult to tell about running backs, but in the case of Right, he's looked a lot more comfortable catching the football. I think Ali has had a little more trouble with that. We haven't seen the explosiveness. I think Wright hits the hole a little faster. I think Ali was always kind of known as a patient runner, which works under some circumstances and is not always a great thing. When you have a team that is good at creating quick level two opportunities, you want that seam hit quickly. If you have a gigantic offensive line that is comfortable in their ability to set up and move people, then you can take a little more of a patient back, like Le'Veon Bell was for years with the Steelers. Ali also has a history as a fumbler. So 8 times, I believe, in his last year in college, or maybe in his college career, but either way, it's too high. And he's a guy who put the ball on the ground on a kickoff return after the whistle was blown in that first preseason game, that certainly hurts him. So anyway, they've got a third running back spot they've got to fill. My guess is that guy might be Collier, and he might be on another team, but I don't believe it's Rasheen Ali. I believe Ali is probably going to get cut. At the very best for Ali, he might go to IR. He might go to season-ending IR even. They may just say, we can't find it, the spot for you to stay, because they've really got four spots for players they want on non-season-ending IR. I'll talk about that a little later when we talk about the roster. So anyway, Ravens had a very difficult injury game, that some of the injuries forced some of their more important rotational and regular players, in the case of Simpson, have to return to the game, which is extremely bad for a preseason game. So they basically had a lot of trouble getting this game over with without additional injuries. Nick Samak, their seventh round pick, was hurt. They had Leary, their quarterback. Don't see how he makes the roster now. Will he make the practice squad? I don't know, and I don't honestly care that much. There probably are better options out there. A lot of things went wrong in this game. But one of the interesting things is that the Ravens now, it looks like, will either cut or IR potentially their last four draft picks from this draft, who would be Ali, Leary, Nick Samak, who got hurt in the game. So I imagine he's going to IR, but I don't know how serious the injury is. It's always serious when you get taken off in a cart, though, I can tell you that. So I'm sure he's going to miss at least some time this season. We'll see how that plays out and whether the Ravens can arrange for him to have a spot. And then Sanusi Kane, I'm not sure he's played well enough to earn a spot. So he may be headed for the practice squad in any case. So beyond that, Tez Walker, who was a fourth round draft pick, and TJ Tampa have not played very much this summer because of injuries. So Walker has missed a fair amount of time, did play against the Packers. But the 2024 draft is looking like those top three players, who all could be pretty good, but Wiggins, a lot is riding on Nate Wiggins at this point. Adisa Isaac, the third round pick, and Rosengarten, the second round pick, to come through and become starters, just to make this a pretty good draft. You get three starters, it's a pretty good draft. But I'm not expecting much from the rest of the draft. Hopefully Tampa or Walker, one of them could be at least a useful NFL player. Tampa was, higher on my cornerback list. I certainly hope he's healthy. I would hope he's healthy anyways, a Ravens draft pick. But hopefully he'll be available at some point this season to play. His roster spot is not insecure. It's secure. It's just a matter of whether he starts the year on a non-season ending IR or he is on the actual 53 to start the year. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the play in this game of the individual players. And I'm just going to go through a few of these and kind of pick them one at a time to go through. Maybe I'll go through alphabetically a little bit. I think Jalen Armour Davis is a guy who certainly did not hurt his stock in this game. And he's now put together a couple of decent games in a row, about 42 snaps, I believe, over the last 2 weeks. Didn't make any glaring errors in this game. He was in trailing coverage on a 13-yard play where Worley made a quick tackle. If that's your worst completion you give up in a day, that's not bad at all. He made a nice downhill tackle on Pearson, the tight end, for a gain of four. And then he had another play where he's fairly close, trailing in coverage, pass went incomplete to the tight end Heath. Actually, that's the wide receiver Heath, number 18, right? It was just past the line of scrimmage anyway, but it was a solid coverage by him there. So it's not like he made a bunch of errors. He improved his stock this summer. He's a roster lock now for Tuesday. I would not have said that to start the summer. I still have reservations about him finding the ball in the air. I will say this: JAD is a player the Ravens could realistically trade before the opener. They only have this year and next year in terms of his service on his initial contract. And if he's their fourth outside corner choice, and I think that's the best you could make him right now, it's behind Humphrey, Stevens, and Wiggins. He might be behind Tampa for that matter, but Tampa hasn't hit the field yet, so we're not sure of where he's going to fit into this certainly. but he's no better than fourth. I think he's a player you can trade. And the Ravens, in terms of positions of strength, have only a couple. So they could trade a cornerback and they could trade a safety probably. They don't really have any other position that I'd say they could trade a player from a surplus of talent they have to maybe actually get something. Now, that's something that's still not going to be much. If they traded Jalen Armour Davis, they might get a 7 conditional to a 6 for him as a year 3 player. That would be about it. Or they might get a player who's in a similar situation at an area of need. So maybe they get a 3rd-year guard from some team where that guy is the team's 4th guard and they really need a cornerback. That could be a possibility where it could work out. Or maybe a 4th-year guard who fits that description. Might be a reasonable trade for Jalen Armour Davis because the Ravens are so shorthanded in terms of experience there. But it'd be somebody who's been a backup, who probably doesn't have any real starting experience, and the Ravens would be taking a chance to that guard, much as whoever acquires JAD would be taking a big freaking chance in terms of him moving into corner for them or playing a significant role. But anyway, JAD, roster lock for Tuesday, so he's in. Let's talk a little bit about Bo Braid, because he played the entire game with the exception of 2 drives, 48 total snaps. If you look at the highlights I have of him in my article, don't know how many people have you read the article and will know if there's an overlap there. Actually, don't send me a DM. Just let me know. You know, is the article something you also read, or are you only a podcast guy? If you're listening to this, you can't tell me you're only an article guy, so I won't even ask for that. But, the people who like the podcast may also like to read the article. And there definitely seem to be a number of people who only read the article because they want to get the information quicker. And I certainly understand that. Getting back to Braid for a second, I had the list of plays. It's about 7 plays in the article. We took notes on him that were positive. There were some other plays where he got blocked and run plays that I didn't include in this. But he had a number of very good run defense plays. They're good run fits. Undercutting running back Wilson, RM3. Penetrating the A gap to take out Merriweather for RM1. Penetrated through the right B gap to tackle Merriweather, RM2. Shed wide receiver Hicks to tackle Merriweather, RM1. Okay, it's not that I don't like a lot of run highlights from my safety. I love it when Kyle Hamilton comes up and makes a play in the run game. I love it when Ed Reed would do it. But I don't want that to be the only thing the guy has. And he has 5 really good run stops. He has 1 good bracket coverage. And then he took an extremely poor angle on a pass right for 20. It was a little screen pass to the tight end Sims where he ended up chasing. He just took a real bad angle to the play. That's not the combination of strengths you want. It's like being a great pass blocker as a running back who can't contribute in any other way offensively, or being a great pass blocking wide receiver who can't contribute as a receiver. It's the more important component of being a safety is being able to cover. And we just haven't really seen that from Bo. It's great that we're seeing a guy who's flying around the field and undercutting, but his problems have come in coverage, and that's unfortunate. So anyway, it's a very deep safety group. His chance to make the team is actually quite limited. I think he might be number 53 right now on the roster. So he is the most tenuous in terms of his position. But he sure could be a guy they like enough for special teams that they say we can have him as the 5th safety and it won't hold us back too much. Bump Cooper is a guy I have absolutely loved this preseason. He's probably been one of my favorite players. He's had a preseason that honestly would win him a job for almost any other NFL team, or let's say for over half of the NFL teams. He would have won a job on their cornerback hierarchy, multiple reasons: versatility to play slot and outside. He's 5'11". He's basically the right size to play either. But more than that, he's played both of them pretty well in this preseason. He's been targeted only 7 times. He's allowed 1 catch for 6 yards. So that's 0.86 yards per target if you're keeping score. And it's a passer rating of 39.6 because he hasn't intercepted a ball, but everything else he's gotten full points for. So outstanding preseason from Cooper. He's certainly improved his stock. I think he's improved the stock with the Ravens. He had a couple of run stops that were good. And these were both in Q4. There are some caveats to go along with this. By Q4, obviously, the Ravens knew the Packers were running the football to try and get the game over with. The Packers also knew the Ravens were running the ball to get the game over with. But anyway, at that point in the game, for him to make two run stops is still not a bad thing. And it's a supplement to what he's doing in coverage. It's not the primary thing. The primary thing is what Cooper has brought in coverage. And the one time they threw at him where there was a high-risk play, he knocked the ball away in the end zone against the Eagles, I believe. Yeah, I guess it was the first game against the Eagles for a pass defense. So anyway, I think he's a player who will be claimed if the Ravens try and pass him through waivers. Now, that doesn't often happen with rookies. Oftentimes, rookies, you're so worried about them getting claimed, and maybe they're a draft pick by you, and Kane falls into this category. I think if he is sent through waivers, I think he passes through. I don't think any other team takes him, and the Ravens are able to sign him to the practice squad. Braid, undrafted free agent, probably the same thing. Cooper, undrafted free agent, and yet I'm saying I think he probably gets claimed if he passes through waivers. There's just a lot of teams know that they need cornerback depth, and a player like Cooper could facilitate the creation of a mid-season replacement for a lot of other teams at corner. So they've got a corner they're not completely sure about his health. They start the season with Cooper. They set themselves up for a week 6 or week 8 return from a corner that they have on their roster currently, and they have a nice now two-man choice to make. And because of the way that you return players from IR, you have a lot of flexibility in when you return them. And that can be used further creatively, time their return with the need very well. So I think Cooper is more valuable this year under the new rules to other teams than he would have been in the past. And that's why I think he probably will get claimed if the Ravens pass him through waivers. Talk about Joe Evans a little bit. Joe Evans played 39 snaps versus the Packers. He's played a total of 145 snaps this preseason, which is an absurd number for anybody, any position really. But, you know, playing 48 snaps a preseason game, you got to be really at the end of the depth chart at a position where the team is thin, and that's exactly what his deal has been. He actually made some nice plays this game, a couple quarterback hits. They were early, and both of them were cleanup shots. If you look at them, they're Q1 1208 and Q1 234. In both cases, there was an initial pressure, the first from Sanat, the second from Simpson. Then he disengaged or was advantaged in terms of his path to the quarterback. But guess what? The reason that happens is because a high motor player has made the effort to get deep into the backfield or try and fan that edge player out such that he's in a good position for that quarterback to move off the spot. And, you know, Michael McCrary was that sort of pass rusher, and I'm not putting Evans in his class. I'm just saying that Evans' motor is terrific. It's one of the things that made him one of the greatest pass rushers in Big Ten history, despite some really significant physical limitations. And he's a guy who, he's very impressive. And I think we saw from the basketball shooting just how much his teammates kind of love him in terms of that. I've heard it at the podium from Kyle Van Noy and from Zach Orr as well, in terms of a guy who is just taking an incredible burden to try and keep the team out of trouble. You know, and amazingly, he plays 145 snaps. He doesn't get hurt. And we have other guys who play, you know, 5 snaps and they get hurt. We'll get to one of those later. So anyway, it's a tough guy, hard-nosed guy, love to see the basketball thing for you. If you didn't understand that, by the way, he said, Joe Evans, Iowa, $1,000 or 1,000. And that's not a 1,000% shooting percentage where he was shooting basketballs at the time in the auditorium. I don't know why they decided to do that, but they did anyway. And that's not a, I'll bet you $1,000 I can make the shot. That was my signing bonus was $1,000, which is the absolute minimum for a UDFA. Everyone gets at least $1,000. In fact, they used to call it the Aussie 500, I think it was. And they may have another term for it, but that's what I recall the term for it, that they'd have 20 people on the phone at the same time trying to sign UDFAs to fill out the camp roster, and they'd be managing a total budget of $100,000 that they could give out. And they'd have to come back and ask Ozzy for another $1,000 for their player kind of thing until they got the amount they needed. And I heard Billick describe the process once, and it's very entertaining sounding. So anyway, Evans, they got for the minimum $1,000. And the mere fact that he's played as he has in the preseason, not gotten hurt, got the Ravens through it, he's been worth a hell of a lot more than that. So it's in terms of where he'll be, I think he probably does get a spot on the Ravens practice squad. It's not obvious that he should to me, but they don't have a lot of healthy outside linebackers that they're not going to keep. And so Evans, I think it makes sense for him to get that spot. They may have another player they like from another team a little more, but I think that based on what's happened in this preseason, I think there's a fairly good chance that that he'll be their guy. Malik Harrison, I'll move on to him. He had a tough game, played the first four series, wasn't particularly good. He had a missed tackle. He had some other cases where he was blocked on run plays near the point of attack or got caught in the wash. There was a fair amount of that. And I mentioned this in the first show, but he was not the player chosen to return when Evandy Rigby got hurt. And then when Rigby returned, Deion Jennings got hurt. They needed another inside linebacker to come in and finish that football game. It very easily could have been Harrison, but it wasn't. They came back. They brought back Trenton Simpson each time, which to me is a bigger risk than Harrison in terms of what you want at the end of a football game. So hopefully Simpson went in with a very clear orders to take it easy, you know, not try and stick his nose in there on any tackles where he might get himself hurt. But anyway, he was able to get the game closed out for the Ravens. A lot of this, you know, I actually think of that in terms of who do you want pitching when Toronto beats the Orioles 24-10. And now, okay, this has happened a lot more to the Orioles in recent years, but the 24-10 loss to Toronto in 1977, I believe, was the first time the Orioles ever had to bring in a position player to pitch in their history. And Larry Harlow came in and gave up, I think it was four consecutive walks and then a grand slam. And then Elrod Hendricks came in and pitched something like 2 1/3 scoreless innings to put the Orioles in a position to get that game over with. But that's kind of the way I feel about Harrison and Simpson. And Evans, for that matter, the Ravens just needed someone to get that game safely over with and not tax, what's otherwise going on with the team. All right, who else do I want to talk about? Talk about Kadar Holman a little bit in the roster, so I'll move on. Adisa Isaac, the Ravens were without for this game. That was unfortunate because it would have been really nice to see him play some more. Certainly a player we've been excited by what he's brought to the table in that second game. We missed him in the first game, left them shorthanded with just three players. So they could have used Isaac in the first half, maybe mixed up his play with Ajabo some, maybe used him at the Sam opposite Ajabo some. And they didn't have to play the whole game. They just had to play a little bit of it. And Tavius Robinson and Joe Evans still would have got plenty of playing time, but Isaac's roster spot is not in jeopardy unless he's actually hurt. In that case, you know, he could be headed to potentially to a season-ending IR. I think there's a fairly good chance he's going to start the year on IR of non-season-ending nature. And there's also a reasonable chance that the Ravens will just hope that the injury is not serious, and I don't have any information on how serious it is, that they might stick him on the roster and basically use the fat of the game day inactives to put him in a position where they don't have to use him. And you have five game day inactives. So you activate 48 if you've got a, actually it's 47, 48. I think it's 48. If you've got eight offensive linemen, so that means you have five guys who you have inactive each game. But then you also have practice squad elevations. You can have two of those per game, so you can have as many as seven of your active roster who you sit for a particular game. Well, the Ravens have got some obvious places to find players like that. They're going to have one offensive lineman probably every game. But that outside linebacker position is a place where they will likely have a player each week who is not active. and Tavius Robinson and Adisa Isaac and even David Ajabo may compete for such spots, depending on how the early results are in terms of their play. So unfortunate to not see Isaac this week. Don't have a lot to say about the play of Sanusi Kane. I just don't see an obvious path for him making the 53. I think his limitation of being a dime back is something the Ravens otherwise have. I don't think they see him as a back end guy. I don't think he's as good as Braid. He did make some good tackles on special team, so they may decide he's a valuable player there that they really want to have. But I think it's going to be tough for Kane to make the roster at this point. He's not injured, so I don't think he goes to start the year on a non-season ending IR. And I also don't think the Ravens have room for him to do that. I think that the natural thing is he gets cut, probably clears waivers. The Ravens offer him a practice squad spot. He may shop that around a little, or his agent may, around the rest of the league, and they may find a new home for him. But my guess is he pretty much ends up with the Ravens and on their practice squad. So I think at least for a period of time, that will work out. It's possible that attrition will make him attractive to other teams as the year goes on. Honestly, in his case, if you're an inside linebacker or you're a safety or you're a running back, those are positions that tend to stay the entire season, or there's a good chance they will stay the entire season because they're the common size and shape pools you're working from there. So it may come to pass that, you know, there are three or four teams in the NFL who are having problems covering the kickoff and give up some, you know, return touchdowns, one or more. And they may say, hey, you know what? Let's find out what the Ravens are doing and bring in Sanusi Kane here to help shore up our coverage team and also just figure out how the Ravens are playing it. You know, what do they draw up on the board that helps them stop these kickoff returns? So it's possible Kane could be attractive to other teams at some point in the season, were that to occur. Mullen played just one series, three snaps. I think it was the second series of the game, if I recall correctly. Yes, it was. So he came in to replace JAD. They're actually looking like they were going to use the same pattern of replacement where they alternated series for the first half, but Mullen didn't make it through that. He only played three snaps, and then he suffered another shoulder separation. His second of camp did not make our notes in the time that he was in there. So just an unfortunate situation, obviously, for him. Don't know exactly how the Ravens will deal with that injury. So he's a guy who it only took him a little while to return from the last shoulder separation, maybe 2.5-3 weeks. So if it were to be that long again, the Ravens could start with him on IR, but there's a lot of competition for those spots where they want to put some players. We'll talk about that a little later. And I think it's more likely they cut him with an injury settlement at this point and just let him out. He does not have guaranteed money in his contract, which frankly is very fortunate, but also means they'll have to probably give him some of that in terms of an injury settlement. Okay, moving on. David Ajabo, he was in there rotationally for the entire first half. He got a quarterback hit when he beat the tight end Wilson outside. That forced an incomplete from Clifford. So mission accomplished on that play. Nice to see him get after the quarterback. Nice to see him beat some players to do it. So when you get an unblocked rush at the quarterback and you knock him down, it's not as good as if you are able to accomplish it by beating someone one-on-one. He did not look terrible in terms of his play on the edge in this game. He lost it once to the pulling left guard. He won it another time versus a tight end to force a play to the inside. And he lost, he was blocked another time by the pulling right guard. I don't really have a problem when a player gets blocked by a pulling right guard. My bugaboo is I don't want to see an edge player losing the edge one-on-one to a tight end. That's the really negative thing. You can't do that and be an effective edge setter. So he didn't have that happen in this game, and that was a good thing, at least not near the point of attack. He's clearly third now on the Ravens outside linebacker depth chart. I think that could change during the season, particularly if Adisa Isaac or Tavius Robinson was to take a step forward. Tavius Robinson is, I think, primarily a early down player as things are set right now. The fact that he's, you know, figured out the boot in this game, well, I guess we'll talk about him next, was one of the really nice things. So it's nice to have a player on early downs who can control the opponent, showing the ability to diagnose the boot and be after the quarterback quickly to minimize the damage on that play. So, I don't know exactly how those three fit, and obviously they have slightly different roles, but Isaac and Ajabo are in direct competition for snaps because they're both rush linebackers. Isaac could probably play a little bit of Sam in this game, but he's not going to be dropping to coverage too much. The primary guys who'd be dropping to coverage are Harrison on early downs and Van Noy on any down. So I think that we'll see all the other four guys, Owe, Ajabo, Robinson, and Isaac, playing primarily on that rush side and seeing more time in pure rush roles. And in Ajabo and Isaac in particular, I would expect to be pretty much situational pass rushers at this point. Let's talk about Robinson for a little, because I thought he had quite a good game. It was a mixed game because there were five run notes for him that we took for being blocked near the point of attack. But he also had a bunch of other good plays. I mentioned the boot. A number of his notes were for getting after the boot effectively and diagnosing that. But he also had a couple just of pressures. He had an unblocked on third and 11. Unblocked, obviously not as good as him beating an individual or a tackle, but he still forced a pass out. Wilson dropped it behind the line of scrimmage and ended a drive. All good things. So nice there. He had a couple good plays against the run, one where he stood up the tight end Sims, and again, got to be able to hold off that tight end and turn that inside. If you're Terrell Suggs, I expect you to handle the tackle one-on-one and get him turned to your to the degree you like. And in Suggs' case, truly a generational edge defender, probably the greatest of the 2000 to the present era to play on the edge. He was a guy that even if you pulled at him, he had a bunch of tricks up his sleeve to make the puller regret that, mostly by going low, which is kind of illegal, but he had his own way of doing it that never seemed to get flagged. So good job there. Did you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Uh, What else did he have? Anything else for? Yeah, he cleaned up on a Pepe Williams missed tackle in this game. It was on a screen to the right to the wide receiver Stanley, and he took him down for no gain. Another good play. So anyway, generally speaking, he looked pretty good. He did get blocked by the tight end Sims on the 20-yard screen pass. I mentioned that, I believe, just earlier, as a play that Bo Braid gave up, where he really took a very bad angle to the receiver. Well, that was kind of in part set up by the fact that Sims executed a block on Robinson to slow him down from getting to the outside and getting to the quarterback as quickly. Well, I guess in that case, either the quarterback or the tight end, or the running back, sorry, who caught the ball. All right. Anything else I want to say about Robinson? I don't think so. The roster spot is 100% secure. He led the Ravens in defensive snaps in this game, and I thought he played quite well. Another guy who's on the roster bubble is Josh Ross, who did not play again. And the inside linebacker depth is pretty darn thin on this team. Ross appears to have a tenuous hold on the last inside linebacker spot to me. Jennings and Rigby each suffered a departure where they left. Rigby has had a tough time tackling, which we'll talk about a little later. But I think Ross is secure in at least getting a practice squad spot. He's a second-year player because of time spent on injured reserve. So he has a slight disadvantage, a slight need to be a little better than players like Rigby or Jennings or somebody else who is a rookie or a year one player on somebody else's practice squad that gets cut come Tuesday and will pass through the waiver wire. So I think there's probably going to be some people at inside linebacker that the Ravens like that may become available. The Ravens position and the claim order is very low. So since they lost the AFC Championship game, I believe they're third to last, or they're 30th out of 32 teams, if I understand this correctly. I may have it wrong, but either way, it is based on previous year success. So it will be they'll be low in the batting order in terms of making their claim. All right, let's move on. De'Edrin Sinat, he left the game late in Q3. Didn't hear anything about what it was on the broadcast. Haven't heard anything since. So I don't have any idea about the seriousness of the injury. Forced Brent Urban to return into the game. He actually had some pretty good plays during the game. He was part of some of the run losses, but he also made some plays against the run. He had a pressure, and he flushed Clifford out of the pocket on one play where Evans got the quarterback hit. So he had some good complimentary pressure. He's doing that from the inside. A longtime veteran in this league. He's been in the league 6 or 7 years now. So he's one of the older defensive linemen that honestly are pretty typical of the Ravens practice squad. So with Sinat and Tupou, they have two such players to choose from for the practice squad. I think they will have at least one of those two on their practice squad come Tuesday. So that'll be an interesting to see how they move forward from that. TJ Tampa, kind of a big disappointment that he hasn't made it to the field. He was a full participant on Tuesday in Baltimore. I don't know if he participated in the Packers practice or not, but obviously he didn't play in the game again. So his roster spot's not in any jeopardy, but he may start the season on IR to maintain that. Let's see. Let's move on to Ardarius Washington, starter treatment. Did not play. Strong practice as we heard it versus the Packers on Thursday. And he finishes the season for the second, if not third year in a row, as one of the Ravens who has increased his prospects the very most to contribute. So last year, let's flash back and remind folks of what the hell happened. The Ravens signed Arthur Maulette potentially to play slot corner. They also had a bunch of in-house options that they started with a safety they converted to slot corner, specifically Brandon Stevens, who they then decided they needed on the outside. So they started, Stevens had been actually a corner to start for 2022, and at the end of the year had been playing, you know, some fairly decent football. They decided to move him to safety at the start of 23. Then they moved him to slot corner, and then they moved him back out to right corner, and he played virtually every snap for the entire season. He sat out one game, and he played basically 100% of the snaps in every other game. So Ardarius Washington came along after Stevens, and after Mollette had gotten hurt, and after they tried, I think, Pepe there, and they finally gave the job to Ardarius Washington. He shined in the preseason last year, won the job going away. Had a sack in, I believe, week one against the Texans. It might have been in week two against the Colts, but no, it's week one against the Texans, I'm pretty sure. And then he got hurt in week two, and unfortunately that ended what was a very promising season for Washington. And he's had to come to camp this year. They put him at a different position at strong safety to add depth there. I still have a sneaky suspicion we're going to see him at slot corner come the opener, because I don't think it'll be Mollette there. And I think that Washington is the most natural fit for the position. And I think he's also better close to the line of scrimmage. And he sure as hell can rush the passer when it's needed. So we'll see how this plays out. But I'd rather have the number four safety, who is otherwise has a lot of fine characteristics to play slot corner, playing up closer to the line of scrimmage on obvious passing downs, than I would wasting his talents on the bench and on special teams, waiting for that opportunity to arise at safety. And it probably will at some time during the year, because the Ravens have had problems keeping safeties healthy. Safeties in general, as all defensive backs, do have some injury problems. But he would move back and play a split field role there, which I believe actually minimizes who he is as a player, with the combination of required instincts, which I don't think his are bad, and required tackling, which I think is minimized by his size and playing on the back end. So it wouldn't be the best use of Ardarius Washington, I don't believe, to play him as a split field safety. That said, he has looked freaking great in camp. He has made play after play, and he has come on. His stock has risen pretty much all camp, from fairly humble beginnings, getting an interception, then getting another interception. And he's probably over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, has taken over from Humphrey over that period of time as being the most dominant defender. There's a few players who maybe can lay claim to that, but Owe early in Allen was getting a lot of pressure. Humphrey had his ball hands on the football all the time. And then Washington started making some plays as well. So to my way of thinking, he's probably been the best for about the last 2 weeks. Nate Wiggins. Just played 30 snaps against the Packers, just the first four series. He was only targeted twice, and they were both incomplete. So it was a drive-ending attempt for Melton. It was one of those. So Wiggins has been as shut down a shutdown corner as you could hope for in this preseason. I'm trying to figure out any reason why he would not be in there to start the season. I can't figure it out. 8 targets, 2 receptions, 8 yards. His coverage results are only outstripped by Cooper. And, you know, he's got Wiggins has 3 PDs and Cooper has 1, but they're otherwise have very similar, you know, yards per target, etc. It's really hard for me to see how you don't get him on the field immediately, at least in a rotational role. He might rotate some with Humphrey. That could be good for Humphrey. They might, you know, use Humphrey in the slot on passing downs and bring Wiggins in only on the outside for those downs. That would make some sense in terms of, you know, preserving Wiggins from having to make any run tackles. I think that, you know, that would be something they very well might try. But anyway, Wiggins is a player I think the team is going to have to get on the field fairly quickly. And with that, let's talk about the defensive MVPs from this game. I'll go pretty quickly through this because we're going to talk about the roster afterwards. I know that's what you're all waiting for. The number 3 player for me is Joe Evans in this game. Really showed the high motor, improved his holdup against tight ends in this game, where he'd had a lot of problems against the Eagles in particular, that blocked him 5 times solo with the tight end on run plays. That was not the case in this game. He was better. It's not like he was never at the point of attack. It's not like the game is perfect by any stretch, but Evans had a good football game, and I think he's earned a spot on the practice squad, in particular with this third game. My number two guy is Tavius Robinson. Fine game. And Tavius figuring out, you know, what's going on with the boot was a nice thing. He also made some other good plays, had a pressure, had an unblocked quarterback hit. So did some nice things in terms of getting after the quarterback, period. Depending on who you are, you might consider some of the boot plays to have been pressures also. I don't think I had any, maybe one of them was labeled that way, but basically they were just getting downhill on the quarterback, making the quarterback know you're on the way, and then forcing that kind of the check down read to level 0/1, where the closest of your three receivers are, as opposed to having a chance to hit that level 2 or level 3 shot, either a, you know, a deep crosser, deep over, or a fly post corner that might have been available in level 3. So Robinson did a good job of minimizing the damage on those boot plays that hadn't occurred in that last game against the Falcons. And then my number one guy is Nate Wiggins. There's only 2 targets in 30 snaps, but when you're Nate Wiggins, they already know who you are and they're not throwing against you. And he could be an outstanding rookie for the Ravens this year. It'll all be come down to how can they find a way to get him in the game on a full-time basis. And there is a path where he and Stevens and Humphrey can still play every single snap if they suddenly decide that Humphrey is a slot corner/strong safety. And they can alternate him and Hamilton on a by-play basis for what they really want on the play, whether they want pass coverage on passing downs in that slot, or they want a horizontal defender who takes away the line of scrimmage with a great split field guy on the back end in Humphrey. I think that could be very exciting, and it would certainly give Nate Wiggins the opportunity to shine. Regardless of what they do, I'm fairly confident the Ravens are structured well to have the back end complement the corners in the same way they did last year. You know, good over-the-top coverage generally improves the amount of space that your underneath guys need to have covered and the amount that they can rely on the players behind them, or the surety with which they can rely on the players behind them might be a better way to say it. Ronald Darby had a great year, and he is an older, experienced, yet middle of the pack cornerback in this league. And he ended up with 5th or 6th best fifth in the entire league in terms of yards per target last year, playing for this Ravens team. So really had a career year. Ronald Darby's also a guy before he came to the Ravens who had allowed over 10 yards per target in a season. He might have actually allowed over 11 yards per target in one of his earlier career seasons. So a really fine year from Darby, and a lot of that is scheme. A lot of that is just having a secondary built from back to front, as the Ravens have had under McDonald and now potentially under Orr as well. All right, let's jump on and talk about the 25-man roster. That's what you guys are presumably here to listen to. So interior defensive line, the Ravens have 5 guys who played all the snaps last season. I expect all 5 of those guys to be on the team in week 1. But if you want your little trick that's going to give you the leg up, Brent Urban will almost certainly be cut and re-signed to the roster on a handshake deal. I think that the 4 IDL who make the team are Pierce, Jones, Matabike, and Washington. Urban will be cut, returned for week 1 after they sort out their injury movements. So there'll be some player who they want to IR and have available later in the year that they will put on the initial 53 in Brent Urban's place. And Urban will then be moved to the active roster for week 1. And then it's possible that would actually be done via a practice squad elevation. But either way, the Ravens and Urban will have an understanding about how and when he'll return to the roster for 2024. And I guarantee you he's on the team because he's playing some good football right now. Outside linebacker, the Ravens have, I believe, 6 players. I think they all make the roster, and in part because one of the players offers some versatility. But those are Adafi Owe, Kyle Van Noy, David Ajabo, Tavius Robinson, Adisa Isaac, and Malik Harrison. Now, Malik Harrison has the versatility to be the backup Mike linebacker should anything happen to Roquan Smith. We're really talking a nuclear situation here if that occurs, because the Ravens would lose an awful lot in terms of the, you know, the leading influence to flow to the gaps correctly. A lot of the cues for Simpson might not be as good with Harrison, but Harrison, I think, will give them a capable mic backup should anything happen. And also, he's capable of getting you through a game, you know, or the rest of a game, at least. And I think that's part of the value of Harrison. I do think he's going to play primarily outside linebacker, Sam linebacker specifically, on early downs. I think that'll, again, be his primary role with this team. But he'll also be a guy we probably occasionally see late in games to relieve Roquan at the mic. So anyway, we'll see how that plays out. But Harrison being that sixth outside linebacker means that's not really too many. A lot of teams would consider five as a maximum number of outside linebackers they keep. And some teams would only keep four. But I think the Ravens, because they have a special teams ace in Harrison and a mic guy, they can get a little looser with it. Now, that does mean that they likely will have an inactive player from that group every week. And that would, the only change I would have to that would be if Harrison was somehow forced into a primary mic role, then I think they might not. They might activate all five of the other guys. Adisa Isaac is a guy who I think is one of the higher probability guys to start the year on IR. I don't know how serious his soft tissue injury is, but it was more like he's going to have to work through that, which is language I don't like to hear from Harbaugh. He's got several different tiers of language. We've talked about this before, but it's not season ending. Might mean he's going to miss half the season, but he's not going to be out for the whole year. And that's what he's used for Arthur Mollett. It's no problem means nothing at all to me, because it could be he's back between anywhere between zero the next day and 8 weeks. Arbaugh's used that terminology with a lot of players. It means a lot less. But when he says something that's in between, like he's going to have to work, it's a soft tissue injury, he's going to have to work through that. Well, I don't know what that means. Soft tissue injury, it actually can be, you know, a ligament strain of some sort that is going to take him 4 to 6 weeks to come back from. And if that's the case, if it's one of these intermediate things, I think the Ravens probably put him on IR and just acknowledge the fact that they're going to have to wait till week five to get him back. And that'll allow them to make use of, or they will make use of one of those four spots. It will also necessitate the use of one of their eight returns from IR. But in truth, the Ravens used every single one of their eight last year. So they in fact restricted the number to eight, I believe, in a move directly pointed at the Baltimore Ravens' very aggressive use of the end of the roster. The Ravens had opportunities to use less than eight of those activations. For example, Malik Ham was activated to practice late during the year to open a three-week window for him to return. That was prophylactic in nature, meaning they didn't have a spot open for him even to play on the roster. They activated him because they thought, hey, there's a risk of him getting injured. We have IR DTRs. We have DTRs remaining, designated to returns remaining, in our pool of eight, and we may as well use him. You know, you may as well use your last manager's challenge when it's the eighth inning kind of thing. That's what it was like. So they activated him to practice for 3 weeks. There is some value, by the way, out of that. Malik Ham gets to practice with the team. That's good experience for him, at least. But then come the end of that time, they didn't have room for him, and they just reverted him to season-ending IR at that point. So again, the Ravens making very judicious use of the rules and end of the roster manipulation. And unfortunately, the tide of rules post-pandemic has been to restrict what the teams that act like the Ravens, which I think they are a group of one, but there are probably a couple other organizations who do it half as well, are able to do with their end of roster manipulation. So anyway, Adisa Isaac quite possibly heads to IR to start the season, but I have him on my prediction for the opening roster as it stands now. Inside linebacker, I have four making the team. Roquan Smith, Trenton Simpson, Chris Board, who I haven't seen in a while, by the way, so don't know how serious his problem is, but he's returning from a concussion. He's on the field. He has not ramped up to full participation yet, but I presume by opening day, he'll be ready to go. Inside linebacker is one of the places where the Ravens will be looking at the waiver wire and seeing who's available. I'm not sure that either Evandy Rigby or Jennings makes a lot of sense. Maybe he, you know, those are practice squad elevations that you go through the first couple of weeks with, but I don't think they command a roster spot. I think you can have either of them on your practice squad without a lot of fear that they're gone. They come from those common size and shape pools. They're not, left tackle sized, and they're not cornerbacks who have length and speed that are more or less common size and shape pools. So, anyway, those are board, I think, will make the team. And I think that Jennings and Rigby will not. And the other fourth linebacker I'm making is Josh Ross. And now Ross is in the single most tenuous spot on the entire roster. There's one other guy who's kind of on the outside looking in, who's also in a tenuous spot, but Ross is probably the most tenuous spot on the defense. With that fourth inside linebacker spot, the Ravens may decide they don't need it because they've got Harrison, and they kind of consider themselves as having four inside linebackers, even when they have five outside linebackers active, because Harrison could just move as needed and morph into the position required. Okay. So that might be true. Possibly number two is that since Ross has been out a lot recently, I don't think they're wedded to him the same way they're wedded to Board, who has guaranteed money, and certainly to either of the starters. So they may be looking at the waiver wire and saying, hey, who's available among inside linebackers? Is there somebody who gives us more than Rigby does? Is there somebody who gives us more than Ross does? A lot of the problem would be solved if Board went to IR to start the year. I don't think that's going to happen, but I guess it's possible if he isn't really ready to go in week one. I think they would probably initially solve the problem with practice squad elevations before they made a move that would keep Board out for 4 weeks. So Josh Ross, last spot on the roster right now, as far as I'm concerned, on the defense, and we'll see if he's able to retain that. Cornerback, I have six guys making the team. That does not even include Ardarius Washington. So that's Humphrey, Stevens, Wiggins, JAD, Tampa, and Cooper. All six of those are guys who can play on the outside. Cooper I have as the last cornerback. I don't think the role is tenuous in his case. I think if they make it, they're deciding that they're putting the right player on the roster. I think Mullen put himself out of the running with the injury. It's unfortunate, but frankly, just injury has created an opportunity for Cooper here. Cooper has tremendous versatility and be able to play inside or outside, as we mentioned earlier. And he has the really nice value of being a rookie who has 4 years of team control, as we would term it in baseball, left to the Orioles. So Cooper is a player that I think makes the roster. Tampa is a guy who may actually start the season on IR. He has not played hardly at all in camp. He just played a very little bit of 11-on-11 that I've seen. Gave up a couple touchdowns there. I don't think we've seen anything like what we can see from TJ Tampa. So I think the ramp up for him is probably going to be a little slower, and they may decide that we're better off sitting him for a minimum of 4 weeks, allowing the roster to shake out in terms of attrition, and then figuring out when is an opportune time to bring him back and not. It does two things. They don't have to risk Cooper to the waiver wire, and they don't have to use the roster spot that could go to any other position and can have Tampa as a midseason replacement. So you really want to set up your midseason replacements. That's part of what roster building is based on this year. The Ravens have a very good one in Mitchell, who I believe just stays on PUP. He doesn't have to go to IR. I may be wrong about that, but I don't believe he has to take an IR spot. He remains on PUP as the season starts. And then he has a three-week window whenever they're ready for him. That may be very late in this season, but he'll be a guy who could be a midseason replacement. Then they have other guys who will decide we'll see who those are in the next couple of days as DaCosta makes the decision and we see what the waiver looks like on Tuesday afternoon, what the waiver wire looks like. All right, let's move on to safety. I've got five safeties making the team: Marcus Williams, Hamilton, Eddie Jackson, Ardarius Washington. Absolutely no doubt about any of those. Washington is, one of the team's slot corner options. They really would have three on the roster I've constructed between Ardarius Washington, Humphrey moving to slot, which I think is very possible given Wiggins' play, and Cooper. being used in the slot, whether that means getting you through the end of a game or whether it means playing there on a more significant level. And then, of course, they have Mollett, who they expect back at some point during the season, who played a capable slot corner last year and could be a guy there. But the Ravens have a lot of options at slot corner, and that's why I specifically left off Pepe Williams from the roster. I think he gets cut on Tuesday. Unfortunate end to his career. I think it's even possible he ends up on the practice squad. I don't think that the demand for his services around the league is going to be extremely high. He's had a rough preseason on everything but pass rush. And again, you want your slot corner to be more of a coverage guy than a pass rush guy. So you want the fit of abilities, the fit of strengths to actually weigh more heavily on the coverage side for any member of the secondary. It's just ideal. It's kind of like you want any offensive lineman to be a better pass blocker than a run blocker. Even at guard, where you need good run blockers, you need guys who can pull and block on the move and whatnot, still more important that they be a good pass blocker. NFL is, you know, has too many pass plays to not be good at that critical function. So anyway, that's my feeling on the matter. And then I have Bo Braid being the last safety who makes the team. Spot would be a little tenuous, probably in his case, yes, but because the Ravens may fill holes from their safety pool, I think that Braid could make a lot of sense as the fifth safety. And they may obviously fill the slot corner position with a safety if Ardarius Washington were removed. They might need a dime back at some time in the year if either Simpson doesn't work out as a coverage player or Roquan Smith misses time at some point. So they needed a dime back, and that could come from their safety group. And of course, they could just have safeties go down, in which case they need extra safeties to make sure Hamilton continue to place that slot corner role. If Hamilton goes down, I throw up my arms and I give up, because he's one of the most critical defenders the Ravens have. So that's the 25 I have. Four on the interior defensive line, even though Urban will be back for week one. Outside linebackers, I have six. That brings us to 10. Inside linebackers, four, bringing us to 14. Corners, six. All of them can play on the outside. That brings us to 20. And then five safeties, including Washington, who is more of a hybrid slot corner slash strong safety at this point, I would say. So the final guy missing the roster is Pepe Williams. Ross, of the guys who is on the roster, is probably the most tenuous in terms of his position. I think he could be replaced off the waiver wire. Otherwise, I think this defense is very sound. They'll be in good shape. I think that they'll use at least one of their IR spots on the defense. That'll be going to Mollett. They would have four in total if they cut both Urban. Oh, I didn't mention Worley. So I don't have Worley making the team either at safety, and you may have noticed that. He's another handshake guy who can come back. Now, in Worley's case, his situation is a little different. He'd be the fifth safety. He could, if they really want to come back, then they might not have Braid make the team. They might give the spot to somebody else. But they if they want to bring Worley back, they probably won't do so until week two, which will non-guarantee his salary essentially for the year. So he makes the vet minimum. Ravens are pretty tight with money. Even the difference between a rookie contract and a vet min contract, I think, is about $300,000 or $400,000, might be $300,000. And so they would want to save that if they could. And in doing so, one way to do so is to bring him back in week two, which makes his salary only paid on a week to week basis during the season. So, and that's something I think they will likely do with Worley. I do expect him back this year, by the way. The Ravens, I think, love Darryl Worley. Still love what he brings for the team in special teams. Still really believe him as a split field safety, but they probably like Eddie Jackson better because they've kept him out of the entire preseason. And they, you know, they went out and they got him, and they may well like Ardarius Washington at that position more. So they may feel like they have the split field depth they need. In any case, I think the worst place Worley ends up is on the Ravens practice squad. They've had a lot of players of his kind of veteran caliber before. He probably gets some activations. And then I would be surprised if he went through to the end of the season without being activated to the 53 at some point. I think that would be actually very surprising. I mean, the Ravens had exceptional luck with injuries at multiple positions to make that happen. So anyway, I do expect Worley to be back as well, although I don't think he'll be on the, I feel very sure he will not be on the roster come Tuesday afternoon, because he's a handshake player. In terms of the waiver wire, I think the Ravens are looking at three positions. I talked about inside linebacker as being one of them. I think they probably like Josh Ross, but Josh Ross had some trouble staying on the field. He does give them something in terms of coverage and run defense, but I think they could easily go out and replace him. And I think they could be looking for a guard, and they could be looking for a running back. And they might acquire one via trade because their waiver wire options are somewhat limited. And again, as I said, I think one of the big trade pieces that they could dangle would be JAD. So I think he's the one. Maybe if enough teams are really paying attention, Cooper could be a guy they could dangle, because other teams may realize that he's not going to make it all through the claims prospects. It has to be one of the better teams in the league. It's kind of like in the Ravens' position, drafting in the final quarter of the league, say, that says, you know, we're not going to get Cooper if we don't trade for him, because if we wait for the waiver claim, somebody's going to get him earlier. So anyway, Ravens do have a couple trade possibilities. That'll be one of the things to look for on Tuesday. That's going to do it for tonight's show. Really appreciate you listening, taking all this time with me, hopefully listening to two parts. If you're still listening right now, really appreciate your loyalty and what you've done for the show over the years. I have a core set of listeners that is unbelievably loyal. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. And you come back to this show time after time. These specific shows, the defense and offense shows, are always the best listened to, along with Friday Morning GM. And if you don't mind, write us a brief review. 5 words to 50 words, anywhere in there. No longer in the 50. I think that's usually the limit on podcast platforms. And that'll help drive some additional traffic to the show. And if not, just show it to a friend of yours who might be interested in the material. Appreciate you listening. I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority. But to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. Obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution helping startups get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. Vanta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. The platform connects you with trusted experts to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vanta. For a limited time, get $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/simplify. That's VANTA.com/simplify for $1,000 off.